Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Come on, come on.
They've got it.
Yes!
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 Yes! Yes!
Come on!
Yes!
We've done it.
As you can hear, England have won the Cricket World Cup. They needed two. They went for two. But he's been run out and the England players and everyone in Trafalgar Square, everyone in the Love Sports studios are going absolutely mental at Jofra Archer. That was his over and it could not have been any more tense. He went for a wide on the first ball.
I can't hear you, but I'm just going to let you drink
it's
in
fine.
This atmosphere.
Kieran, you can go hang up, enjoy. Thank you, Kieran in Trafalgar Square. What an afternoon of cricket. We've got Kieran back in the studio. Mate, are you okay? Are you okay?
It just means so much.
Wow.
That's brilliant, isn't it?
I've never done anything like that. And I never expected, I never foresaw and envisaged a moment like that on the radio. And it couldn't have been any more perfect. I know we're supposed to be doing transfer rumours, but Graham, you've been glued to the TV as well for the cricket today. I can't get over it. I still can't. I mean, listening to that back as well, I'm not even a huge cricket fan. I'm a football man, but I'm struggling to think of times and moments in my life as a sporting nut that I've enjoyed as much as that.
Do you know, I was thinking exactly the same thing when I'm driving in. I just finished work at 8 o'clock. I'm driving here and I'm thinking, wow, that is just unbelievable. Like the emotion that you went through and the sort of, I don't know, just the true emotion of everything. And going back to sort of experience things in our lifetime, I think the closest I can get to that is I was luckily enough, a little story about the 2003 Rugby World Cup final when Johnny Wilkinson done the drop goal in the last minute.
Was that 2005 or three?
Three, because three. I was at Orient at the time.
Oh,
and
right.
We had a youth team game against Brentford away, and I'd got myself sent off 2 weeks previous.
Classic.
And they're still claiming that I'd done it on purpose, so I was actually suspended for the Brentford game. So I travelled down to Brentford on the Saturday morning with the guys.
Yeah.
And they played, and I sat myself in the the lounge and the sort of cafeteria area with a massive screen there with my feet up on the table watching the rugby while the boys were playing outside. And eventually I went out and sort of told them that we'd won it in the last minute. But that today I thought was it's coupled with obviously the tennis and the Formula One and stuff like that. But I was glued to the cricket.
Mm.
I've been watching the whole World Cup. I'm, again, like you, Jake, I'm not a massive cricket fan.
I love it. Don't get me wrong.
I don't watch county cricket. I've never watched county cricket. I watch the Ashes in a couple of weeks' time.
Mm. I'm a fair weather.
Yeah. So I've watched the World Cup quite a bit, enjoyed all the England games, enjoyed the Australia game during the week, and that today was just unbelievable from sort of getting New Zealand getting 2-4-1, and you're thinking, well, that's a chaseable target with the boys that we've got in our team and what they can produce and the way Roy and Bairstow had opened in the last 4 or 5 games. You know, I thought 2-4-1, you know, just be pragmatic, be methodical in how you bat and you'll see it through. But that's not how they play, and they were coming unstuck and sort of going 4 down, 5 down, and you're like, this is not how these guys play. They just whack the ball. And obviously Stokes and Butler were fantastic in bringing it back for us, but and then with that super over, I've never seen a super over before in my life.
Well, this is the thing. Luckily, I had Kieran in the studio, who is our cricket expert, and was able to explain it to us. But you know, when I come on air at 7, I have to come into the studio about 6:57. And the last over was starting at about 6:50. So I'm thinking, well, I'm going to see what happens here and I'll be able to start my show knowing what the result is. But it just dragged on and on and on forever. There was a moment where Ben, when Tim Southee was running in, No, it was Trent Bolt, so he was running in.
Yeah.
And then Ben stopped, didn't he, and stepped away.
Yep.
There seemed to be like a minute between every single ball. To literally the moment the last ball happened when England needed two, and they didn't get to, I and everyone else just presumed England had lost, because obviously all we had in our mind was that England needed two.
Yeah.
So I came onto the radio and I start my show saying, you know, what a wonderful day of sport it's been. The tennis is still going. Lewis Hamilton, sixth Grand Prix victory for him at Silverstone. But unfortunately, as wonderful as the game was, England have lost. And then in my ear and in my little screen here, it's like, no, it's gone to a super, what's it called again?
Super over.
Oh, super over. And again, I was saying to the guys a little bit earlier on, honestly, mate, I think this could be a film. In the sense of, you know, if you start from the very start of the day, like, well, first of all, actually, no, let's start even before then, beating Australia, or if you'd even go before then, England needing to win the last two games against India and Australia, New Zealand, to get through, to then beating Australia, you know, our biggest rivals, and so convincingly, everyone thought that it was done and won by that point. Going into today, it was raining and it was torrential. Christ, is this whole thing going to get called off? To then losing the toss, and England have really enjoyed winning the toss. So every time we've won it, we've chosen to bat and we've won. Now, I know people have said, you know, if we were ever going to lose a toss, it wasn't the worst one to lose today. But regardless, we would have rather won it, right? And then New Zealand started particularly well. It's a decent total. It's a very decent total for New Zealand to set. We then lose a couple of early wickets. Jason Roy has been so superb. And then the middle order hasn't really performed throughout. Well, it did today, and it had to today. To then, obviously, the last few balls with the six initially from Ben Stokes, where, again, it was Trent Bolt, wasn't it, who then steps back on to the rope.
Right,
so that was a six, when it quite easy could have been out. To then, in the final over, the two, which then ended up going for a four as he threw the ball in and hit Ben Stokes' bat. It was just... Then they're going into the super over. I mean, I still can't quite soak in every single thing that happened on that day to the point that it was the perfect story that I think that it doesn't do justice unless this is made into some kind of film.
I think you're probably right there. It's one of those I think you're going to have to watch about three or four times because you end up remembering things that you watched during the game, but then you can talk about with friends and family and stuff and go, oh, do you remember this? Do you remember that? Do you remember that? Oh, but what about this? And then when you watch something, you go, oh, God, I keep forgetting
moments.
Yeah, but the double six that we had, I don't know whether you call it a double six, I'm not too sure. The two that you said, where Bolt stepped back on the rope, that was a six.
When he easily could have caught it and just thrown it, but he didn't realise where he was.
Yeah,
he had it.
We weren't hitting boundaries.
No.
Not enough for what we needed. And
not
I kept looking at the score, and it was always with... two runs a ball. It was always like that.
Yeah, which is too much.
Especially when you get down to sort of 10, 14 balls left. And I'm like, I know Stokes has got sixes in him, but looking at him, he is physically shattered. I don't even think he's got the energy to hit it to the other end of the wicket, let alone the bloody boundary. So then I'm thinking, I don't know. In my head, I'm sitting there hoping, I'm going, he's got it in him. If he just starts welting the ball and really swinging for it, he will connect.
Yeah.
The first six, you think, well, hold on, that's brought it down a little bit. Then the overthrows, or I think whatever they call it, and then it went for a two, and then it hit Ben Stokes, and it went for four, so it's a double six. I'm like, you've just got 12 runs off of two balls now that it was just come out of nowhere.
You didn't account for it.
And I think this is the one that we're watching now on the screen. I don't see why he didn't throw it to him quicker. Because
he doesn't realise how close he is.
Yeah,
he
that's
has
right.
It. He has it under full control. This
He's
extra step here.
Yep,
he doesn't need to do that. And then he throws it.
Yep.
It's over. It is. But there were so many moments where it could have been over, but it just kept going England's way. And for New Zealand, again, I was saying to Kieran earlier on, it's the most horrific bad luck. With that Ben Stokes six, which was actually a two, which ended up hitting his bat, at the vital moment, because that two wasn't enough. It wasn't enough. It would have been over. And suddenly, out of just the most horrific, again, we're just seeing the pictures of this right now, it becomes... New Zealand have won it by that point.
Yeah.
Imagine if that was the other way around. We would be sat here pleading... You know, the biggest...
are injustice.
Yeah, the biggest injustice crime, sporting crime of all time since Maradona in 86. We would be, though, wouldn't
we? Yeah, no, you would. Unfortunately, it's the rules. Well, fortunately for us, obviously, it's the rules, but it must be so harsh for him standing there. And New Zealand have been brilliant, to be fair. I thought their fielding, their bowling, I didn't realise just how good a bowler Lockie Ferguson is. Him and Trent Bolt were absolutely on the money the whole day. It was fantastic to watch them. But to sort of, when you say sort of lose out on an incident like that, two finals in a row now they've lost, you know, and it must be gut-wrenching for them. But, you know, it's a lovely day to be English, and I'm really... It was a fitting end to a wonderful day of sport. It was just a great match to watch, but it was so nerve-wracking. And now, but and then we've got 2 week break. Now we've got bloody Ashes coming up now.
Yeah, I know. Well, so. I mean, how do we pick ourselves up from there?
Well, I don't know. I mean, remember last year we were saying this is the summer we had Love Island on and we had the World Cup. Now we've just had this. And it's
have you really just compared Super Sunday and trying to run a Love Island comparison?
Listen, you can't hide away for too long. Oh, no.
Unbelievable.
We're not going down that route again.
No, we're not.
Can we go to transfers?
Do you want to do transfers?
I don't know something. I can talk about cricket. I wouldn't have thought I could talk about cricket for a whole hour.
We can try.
I don't think...
You don't want to. Graham, if you don't want to, just say. No. You want to talk about football. Yeah. All right, well, look.
So I don't think we'll be here next week if we spoke for a
while. Yeah, you're right. Every cricket expert, these two idiots, what on earth are they talking about? Sorry, guys, we're just excited, all right? We watched our first cricket game. God, let us have our moment. Okay, then what we'll do, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We will talk about transfers. But I don't particularly want to talk about the first one, but we are going to have to. Do you know? Yeah. Do you know who?
Slabhead.
Yeah, or Slabhead. We'll have an update. We'll have a little discussion, a debate perhaps, about Harry Maguire's future. Up next here on the Transfer Rumour Mill, not the cricket show, here on Love Sport Radio.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
And I love sport more today than I do any other day. It's been wonderful. But Graham doesn't want to talk about cricket anymore. No, mainly I think you're doing us a favour. Right. We enjoyed it, didn't we?
But yes, I think we were not going to overrun it. You know, no. We're not going
to we'll let the cricket
mask in the glory
that.
Of it.
Yes, they'll do that morning on the breakfast show. They'll have some cricket guests. Yeah, they'll have some cricket guests who can do it much
better.
Me
and you.
Yeah, imagine that. They'll ring me up and say, Jake, you did the moment when England won the Cricket World Cup final. Talk us through it.
Would you like to talk about it?
Yeah.
Again?
And then after a couple of questions, and they'll start asking me about some of the players, I'm like... I'll get the names wrong. Ben Archer.
Sorry, is my line going?
Yeah.
My line's going. Oh, sorry, yeah. I can't hear you.
That Owen Stokes had a right good game, didn't he? He hit it real good. Yeah, should we do football?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about Harry Maguire, shall we? It's been a saga, I suppose. I mean, we could go back 12 months. Man United bid £65 million, was it, off the back of the World Cup. Leicester said no. Harry Maguire wasn't too bothered. Ended up signing a new 5-year deal at the football club. Well, that hasn't gone away. Manchester United and both Man City rumoured to be interested this summer. Well, Manchester United had a £70 million bid rejected the other week. That was their opening bid. You always suspect that once you bid once, you come in again. It was all about whether Manchester United did and how much that second bid was. Now, all the suggestions and all the reports and everything I read as well, and if there's any football club that I do tend to hear before anyone else, it is my club, Leicester City. And I heard yesterday that there had been a discussion at the French pre-season camp where Harry had suggested that he was frustrated at the lack of movement and the slowness that it was taking for this move to happen, and that Man United were imminently going to come in with an £80 million bid. So I heard this yesterday. And again, you always take it slight with a pinch of salt. But it does mean that when I do see the news today, various newspapers suggesting that an £80 million bid has been put in and it's been accepted, I do tend to side on the fact that this is now going to happen, that Harry Maguire is going to go to Manchester United.
It reminds me a little bit of the Bale saga that we had. That you know the inevitable is going to happen. It's just a case of when, if not if.
Mm.
And I think for everybody's sake, it needs to happen sooner rather than later. Purely for the player's sake, so he can get a good enough pre-season in. It needs to happen for Man United, so they can embed him into what he's trying to build there and get him in quickly. And it needs to happen for Leicester, so then they can really look to establish what they've already built upon. You lose Harry Maguire, you lose a main part of your...
Yeah, well, he's England's best centre half, isn't he? England's best centre half. That's undoubted.
So, if he's turning around and venting frustrations that he's worried about the slowness that he obviously wants out, so to speak, he obviously wants the move to happen, and he's trying to speed it along. Now, is that the right way to go? I don't know.
Well,
but
I think I think, all in all,
it needs to happen quickly.
Yeah. I think, in all due respect to Harry Azzat, he probably handled himself fairly well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, definitely.
You know, as big a club as Leicester are, and as grateful and as thankful as he is, and as much as he's enjoyed being there, you know, when he is being, you know, as much of a prominent figure at England, which he undoubtedly is. If you go to any England games, he's pretty much a fan's favourite. He's one of the first names on the team sheet. It's a little bit odd, I suppose, that he is at Leicester City and not one of the big six. And when there are suggestions of a world record transfer bid coming in, I was going to say it goes to his head.
There's a lot going up there, then.
But you know what I mean. Naturally, he's sitting here thinking, well, do you know what? Yes, I am happy. And to quote a Love Island phrase, could I be happier?
Has he had his head turned?
But this is the thing, though, isn't it? And you do sit there and think. And aside, I'm not angry and I'm not frustrated. It was always about the way that he handled himself. And as far as I'm aware, he's handled himself fairly well. You know, he did express a wish to go, but only if the fee was correct. And £80 million, I mean, I'd always like more, but that feels like that's the very most anyone can ask for a footballer, particularly of Harry Maguire's ability, because whilst he is a very, very good defender, and he is, he would get into any top six side, in my opinion. He'd get into a top six side squad. There are a couple of obviously very good defenders. But my point is, he's an outstanding defender. Is he world-class? Probably not. So should an £80 million transfer fee go alongside that? Probably not. But in terms of what Manchester United need and want, there's not really any other defender out there who can offer that, is there?
I'm surprised they have... Well, you say that. Look at Alderweireld at 25 million.
Yeah, no, that's
fair. I'm sitting there thinking...
It's unbelievable.
He's 18 months older than Maguire. Vastly more experienced. I think much better defender.
The mind boggles with Alderweireld.
If Man United are willing to...
Same with Man City, though.
If they're willing to throw 80 million... I think Man United are in more of a precarious position than Man City. Man City, I don't think they need a centre. They're not crying out for a centre-half at the minute. I think they can get away with... they've lost company.
And
but you've got Stones...
Otamendi's going to go.
Stones and Laporte, I think
but
they
can... But he doesn't trust Stones, does
no,
he?
No, he clearly doesn't.
No.
But I think Man United are in more of a position than to what need and want a centre-half than Man City. If they're willing to throw 80 million at Maguire, I struggle... And offer him probably double, at least double than what he's on now.
Yeah. Why are they not doing... He's on about 100k already.
Why are they not doing exactly the same thing to Alderweireld and sort of saying to him, well... We can double your wages to what you're on at Spurs. You're playing for Man United. You're going to play every week, obviously.
Yeah.
Here's a massive signing on fee and contract and whatnot, because we're only going to pay £25 million for you. And yet they're willing to pay £80 million for Maguire. That one, but whether they have, and Spurs have turned it down, or Alderweireld said, no, I'm not going now. I'm not going to go to another Premier League club. Whether he's turned around and said that, we don't know, but it's a strange one.
Yeah, no, it is really strange. And I think that... They're not two particularly good examples, I think, Maguire and Alderweireld, because so you've got on one side, you've got a very overinflated fee because of the excitement around him. And there is, you know, there is, he's become somewhat of a darling, hasn't he, of the press, of Leicester fans, of England fans. Whereas Alderweireld, we've known about this contract situation for so, so long. And I don't know, I have no idea why anyone in the Premier League or in Europe wouldn't snap off Spurs' hands at 25 million quid. Because there are so many Premier League clubs as well. I mean, smaller ones than Spurs. But if it's boiling down to money, there are clubs smaller than Spurs. I mean, Leicester could pay £25 million and offer him more money than he's on right now at Spurs. Now, I'm not saying he'd go, but I find it absolutely unbelievable that more clubs are not coming in for him at the moment. It is absolutely unbelievable. And I wonder if there is anything else to it.
That being said, which makes me... was going to move on to what you just said there, which makes me think whether... behind the scenes there has been something along the lines of, if Alderweireld is to go, he's not to go to another Premier League club. Because of
but
the
surely within the clause they haven't got a say on that.
Who knows, like you said, it's just baffling that not more clubs have come in for him. You know, if you look at, I dare to say it, someone like Liverpool, you know,
he'd improve Liverpool.
They've got everything in place to really challenge for a few years. All you need is another centre-half to go alongside Van Dijk.
Yeah.
Who better than Alderweireld?
Yeah, mate, I 100% agree. I don't get it at all. I don't get it all. But in terms of then the football club that Harry Maguire is going to go into, people have been talking about Manchester United as being a bit of a troubled club and perhaps not the best place to go to. But it does have to change at some point, and Manchester United do have to do everything they can to change. And I think that the business they've done this summer, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, I think that's a good signing. It brings back, you know, people keep talking about this core of young English players. Wan-Bissaka, if Maguire comes in, Daniel James, and obviously he's Welsh. They've been linked with other players like sort of Sean Longstaff. There is a clear kind of vision, isn't it?
Yeah.
At Manchester United right now, which feels like there's not been there before. It's been just throwing as much poo at a wall and hoping that a very expensive one sticks. But now it feels like Solskjaer wants out of some of those players, and he is trying to change things. So Maguire can be a part of that. It's not like he's going to go into a Manchester United that, say, for instance, Alexis Sanchez went into. It feels like it will be a slightly different environment.
A more homegrown environment, I think. And you had the likes of Lingard, Rashford, Luke Shaw.
They'll stay. Yeah, they've got contracts.
I can see them all staying, and they're being... The Daniel James one, I feel, was a massive statement as kind of what route they're going to go down. You know, they're willing to spend 15 million on a... Is he Welsh?
Yeah, he's Welsh. Yeah.
15 million on a Welshman. You don't really see Man United doing that. They're all for the big money, the big name players, the Alexis Sanchez, the Pogbas, the Lukaku's.
And, yeah, your Di Maria's and all that nonsense.
The sort of the name at the time fits. Okay, well, we're signing.
Yeah.
Daniel James was something completely different to what they've been doing of recent years. And it kind of, to me, showed me the route that they're going to go down. Maguire will add to that. Like you say, Sean Longstaff, and I'm sure there's others out there that they've been linked to that are this sort of British, young British energetic core that kind of speak the same language off the field and on the field and have a bit of harmony about them and sort of bring back very slowly this old class of 92. Is that Stormzy?
I've just seen Stormzy doing the checkered flag at Silverstone. Apologies, that did distract me. I did not know that happened.
I had to look twice as well, and I'm looking at it. He doesn't even know what he's doing.
Like, why has that happened? He looks like having a great time.
Yeah,
but anyway, for Maguire going into that Manchester United dressing room, a lot is going to be expected of him. And know that it's not him choosing to spend £80 million on him, but naturally it's going to be talked about. It will be discussed. There is going to be more focus on him. It's like when a goalkeeper moves from a mid-table club to a top six club. Every single goal gets analysed more. Every single goal that Manchester United concede next season, people will be looking at Maguire's role within that. Could he have done better? How do you think Maguire will step up? Because I know he's done it with England, which there's definitely similarities to that, and he's shown that he can make that step up. But I suppose going to Old Trafford and Manchester United with this price tag, it's going to be even more kind of interest, you know, and analysis on Harry Maguire and the way that he defends. Do you think he has it within him to transform? You know, the way that, say, for instance, Virgil van Dijk transformed Liverpool, Harry Maguire's going to have to do, is certainly be expected to do something similar. I mean, not saying let's go win the Champions League, because they're not in the top, but you know what I mean? He'll have to do that, won't he?
I think he's got it in him. The question is, who is he going to be paired alongside?
Yeah, they need to sign another one, don't they?
Because 18 months of chop and change, is it going to be Smalling? Is it going to be Jones? Is it going to be Eric Bailly? Is it going to be Lindelof? If it's Maguire plus one for the whole season and he doesn't get that continuity with a centre-half, his left-back and his right-back, he will struggle. I think if Solskjaer is willing to settle down on a back four of, like, say, Luke Shaw...
So who would you partner with Maguire? Because I think Luke Shaw, Wan-Bissaka and De Gea, that picks itself, doesn't it, Maguire? It really is who else sits alongside him. You've got Jones, you've got Smalling, you've got Lindelof. It's got to be Lindelof, hasn't it?
I would go Lindelof, probably then Smalling, then Jones. Alongside him. And I think if they do get Maguire in, one of them three will leave. I can see Phil Jones heading out somewhere. I don't know where. I can see him going.
Yeah.
You never know.
They've got long contracts, haven't they? That's the problem.
That's
they were both given new contracts.
That's the thing. But, you can't have Maguire, Lindelof, Smalling and Jones all fighting for the same spot and all of them being happy about it. You just can't. It's not going to work. Maguire gets signed for $8 million. Maguire is going to play. He's there for a reason.
He's clearly better than the other defenders.
So it's Maguire plus one. Now, he has to decide very quickly who that one is, stick with them and trust him and stick with them to get the best out of Maguire. If it's Jones one week, Smalling the next, Lindelof the next,
that's
Ashley
no
Young
anyone,
the next,
no,
it's not going to do Harry Maguire any good whatsoever.
Yeah. So we'll leave this Harry Maguire chat here, but just very, very quickly, because I say this is conflicting reports. This isn't signed, sealed, delivered by any stretch of the imagination. So many of the biggest tabloid newspapers are suggesting that deal has been agreed and he's going to fly to Manchester tomorrow to undergo a medical ahead of that move. They're saying it's going to be £60 million plus 20 add-ons. But I say it's conflicting. So I'm not going to name this source, but this is what he's just sent to me. The latest word from inside Leicester is that Harry Maguire is not having a medical at Manchester United tomorrow. And the Leicester owners are unwilling to sell him for £80 million. Of course, if Maguire is pushing hard to leave, then that may change the landscape down the line. So that is my inside line. Whether that is true, whether that is not, we'll have to wait and see. But it is interesting. It does feel anyway, at the very least, that there is traction, there's momentum building one way or the other on the future of Harry Maguire. So we shall wait and see. Harry Maguire to Manchester United, £80 million. It would be a world record fee for a defender. Plenty, plenty of pressure on those shoulders there of the English defender. Need to take a break when we come back. We'll turn our attentions away from both cricket and football.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
Yeah, welcome back to the Transfer Rumour Mill show here on Love Sport. Myself, Jake Watson, joined by Graham Butler in the studio. Just been speaking Harry Maguire once again, just to reiterate that deal. According to my source, and it's not HP before anyone says, is that deal has not been agreed unless the owner is still unwilling to sell. But they're saying it is very much on Harry Maguire, how much he wants to push forward that move. My feeling, though, is that £80 million deal will happen before the end of the transfer window. That's just my feeling, not going necessarily on my source. But let's move away from Leicester City and Harry Maguire. Let's do Everton before maybe doing a bit of Arsenal Spurs with the William Saliba saga that appears like that's about to happen. But a couple with Everton, one pretty much confirmed, and then a rumour. We'll start with Fabian Delph. Looks like he's going to confirm that move from Manchester City to Everton in the coming hours/days.
That came out of nowhere for me, to be honest. I wasn't expecting that one. Quite an astute signing, I think, for Everton. That they have a tendency, or they've had a tendency the last few years, to go through a stage where they really, really ship a lot of goals. Mm. And they go normally over the Christmas-January period, where they just seem to fall apart and lose all track of what they're doing, where they're going as a team and as a club and stuff. And I think someone like Fabian Delph, who's a winner, who's been around a little while now, not a world beater, but still in and around the England setup. Mm. I think he's quite, for 8 million, he's quite an astute signing for Everton. And it's someone who might just calm the sort of less, the younger heads down a little bit, those a little bit more inexperienced than him. And he might just go in there and just sort of steady the ship a little bit and have that calming influence that kind of Rooney might have had done a few years ago when he was there.
Yeah. How good, though, do you think he is? Because he's in the England squad. Gareth likes him. He started both games in the UEFA Nations League. Pep likes him. The only reason he's allowing him to leave is because he accepts he's not going to play every week. So clearly there is something there. But I have to say, I'm not entirely convinced he's that good. I'm not entirely convinced, Graham, he's even going to start for Everton.
For Everton,
which
I think
would defeat the whole point of him moving.
Yes, I think for Everton, Everton is about his level, so to speak. Everyone was completely shocked when he went to Man City.
Yeah.
And he's sort of winged the last few years there, to be honest.
He's been riding on the crest of someone else's glory to a certain degree.
And when you look at the standard of player and the calibre of player there, and then with all due, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, but when you chuck in Fabian Delph in with the likes of Kevin De Bruyne, David Silva, Sergio Aguero, it doesn't quite fit. And he was only really playing when there was injuries. And he'd done okay, don't get me wrong. He never really stepped out of place. But Everton, I feel, is more his level, and I think his level will then be shown at Everton. Whether he plays every game, he's injury prone as well.
Yeah, no,
which is going to sort of hinder him somewhere along the line. But I think, if I'm going to be brutally honest, I think Everton will show him that is his level.
Mm. For you, where does he play?
I think he's a better left back than he is a centre midfielder.
Which is strange, isn't it? Because
he was
a centre midfielder.
He started at Leeds.
Yeah,
as a
he was Leeds.
Yeah,
and then Villa, then Man City, and he was a centre midfielder.
He's got the energy. He's got the energy.
But doesn't do anything quite good enough.
No, and that's where I think he's better as a left back than a midfielder, because although you can have that energy, I don't think he has the discipline to play in a centre midfield role, and I don't think he has the quality to play in a centre midfield role.
I think there's a lack of quality in all departments, in the sense of not saying he's rubbish, but just there's not quite anything outstanding about his game, and you've got to be something. You know, if you're an Andre Gomes in that Everton midfield, what is his quality? He's a superb passer of the football. What does Delph offer other than energy? And with the greatest respect, I'll offer energy.
For
5 minutes.
Yeah,
but,
not for very long. But
what are 5 minutes, yeah. Graham?
Hero status. But no, so on that basis, that's why I would put him at left back. And I think when he played at left back for Man City for a little while, he was actually very, very good.
Yeah. No, I watched, because, by the way, he played in the Carling Cup quarter final against Leicester.
Yeah.
And when Riyad Mahrez was still there, he had him in his back pocket, yeah. Fabian Delph. He generally did.
There's a bit of pace about him. He can tackle. He's got that physique of a fullback. You know, he's quite slight. He's not tall. He's quite nimble over the distance. He's quite sharp. He's left-footed, which always helps as well. He's quite neat in possession. So as a left-back, I would say, yeah, if he went to Everton, which he's not because of Luka Dean.
Well, that's the thing. He's not going to play ahead of Luka Dean.
Exactly.
Everton
so
fans
he's clearly
think
gone
he's
there.
The best thing since Leighton Baines.
Since Leighton Baines. So I think he's going to go there as a centre midfielder. But if they didn't have a left back and he went there for 8 million, I would say that's a really, really good signing for Everton.
Mm.
But he's gone there for 8 million. You go, yeah, okay, I can see what he's going to bring to the team. But where is he going to play? That's going to be the issue that I think they're going to have.
Yeah, no, it will be interesting to see. I've got this sneaking suspicion, though, Graham, that Fabian Delph is going to leave Man City so he can play more football and cement his place in the England side. But he's going to leave Man City and then end up playing more football but then lose his place in the England side because he's no longer at Man City. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, you're probably right. He'll kind of be forgotten about.
Yeah, it's like he was in there because he was at Manchester City, and I feel that's harsh to say. But
he's left somewhere to gain more football to cement his place in the England team. But then he's actually been found out that he's not actually that good and that he doesn't play for Man City anymore. Therefore, you don't actually count as an England squad member because you're not in the top six and you're not in European football. So we've forgotten kind of who you are.
It feels a little bit hard to say, but I genuinely think that'll happen.
That's probably true.
I think it'll
happen. There's other incidents. I can't think of Ryan Bertrand. Yes,
you know he was in there at Chelsea. He continued to be there at Southampton. And then just the second there was anyone else, he was just pushed out. Why? Because he was at Southampton. You're so easily forgotten about. The guy has been completely forgotten. And he's a very, very good footballer. Let's stay on the theme of Everton somewhat. Diego Costa, the maverick that is Diego.
I love him.
Oh, Diego, former Chelsea striker at Atletico Madrid. Looks like he's going to be on the move. Atletico have signed João Felix. They've also signed Alvaro Morata. I know they've just sold Antoine Griezmann. Yeah. I'm not sure how this is going to work out. But it feels like Costa's going to be on the way out. It feels natural he'd come back to the Premier League, would it not? Everton and Wolves both linked with Diego.
Well, I think he'd be a better fit. It's a strange move if he went to Everton, but he'd...
But why would it, though? Because they want a striker, and they want a number nine, and he's got to be able to play as a lone striker. That's how Everton play.
That's why
he's clear upgrade on Dominic Calvert-Lewin. I'm not sure who his agent is, but there's probably a link somewhere in terms of that club and Everton.
There's got to be, because in my lifetime...
And they can pay him good money.
I never thought in my lifetime I'd see Diego Costa being linked with Everton. It just doesn't fit.
Stranger things have happened.
But... They're on the lookout for a centre forward. They need a goal scorer. He would be absolutely brilliant for them. He'd be perfect. Wolves is a funny one because of obviously Raul Jimenez.
Yeah.
Now him, Diego Jota.
That's where I think more the link is. I think there's a Mendes link there with Costa and Wolves.
Yeah.
I think that's where that link exists.
Can I see him ending up at either of them? I would be surprised. I would honestly at him ending up at either Wolves or Everton. But if you was to sit here and say who would he benefit more, Everton 100%. 100%.
Yeah. But do you not think though he's seen his better days? Two goals last year for Atletico Madrid. Do you know what I mean? What we think of when we think about Diego Costa is the one we saw at Chelsea.
Yeah, that's true.
There's a chance game he doesn't exist anymore, and Everton will be paying over the odds and big money for someone that they remember.
A bit like Torres.
Yeah, exactly.
Or like
it happens that you bring a striker past their best because what you remember them as.
I think they just want to bring him just for the fun of it. You know what you're going to get with him? There's just going to be like some sort of drama every other week with him. I don't know. It depends, I think, on the manager. Who does he feel that can get maybe the best out of him again? He seems like one of those that you just want to have an arm round and go and tell him that he's brilliant.
I wouldn't put my arm round him.
No. I mean, in a sort of metaphorical term, in as much as I'd
steer clear. How you say, Diego? You just pull a face like, yeah, okay, good. See you tomorrow.
Excellent. Yep, good. As long as you're okay, just
I want to stay
the
other end of the training field today. You'd steer clear of him at all costs, wouldn't you?
But
start a fight with himself in an empty room.
I think if you sort of sat down with him just before you signed him and sort of said, right, which Diego are we getting? Mm. Are we going to get the one that is going to run into channels, bully centre-halves, behave himself and score 20 goals for us? Mm. Or are we going to get the Diego that is going to be a nuisance in the change room, a pain in the bum?
Yeah, and getting sent off every
getting
other week.
Sent off every other week, arguing with refs and just a complete pain.
Yeah. I have to say, I couldn't stand him, you know, when he was at Chelsea.
I loved him.
I like a bit of theatrics. I like a bit of drama. I like a bit of needle. But it was just, it was the antics. It was just too much. It was just too much. And there is a line, isn't there?
Yep.
You know, you want like someone who plays on the edge. That's what people always say, isn't it? He wasn't playing on the edge.
he
fought over the flipping edge and was taking everyone down with him at times.
Even Trent Bolt.
Yes.
He stepped on the edge and went over it. No, but I get where you're at. And I remember him at Chelsea when... Whenever he come up against Spurs and you sort of an hour before the game, you wait for the team sheet to come out. If ever I saw Diego Costa's name on there, inadvertently it was always with Hazard anyway.
Yeah.
But whenever I saw Costa's name on there, I thought, oh no, the two centre-halves are going to get a roast
today.
And
I get that.
And when I didn't see him in the team sheet, I thought, oh, okay, we've got a bit more of a chance here. There's a major threat gone. And that's what he sort of brought to the game. And I remember watching a game for Chelsea when they went down to 10 men against Arsenal, and he was fantastic. Mm. The lone centre-forward, they just put 7-8 men behind the ball and left Hazard in the number 10 and Diego Costa up front, and it was just them two, and he ran himself silly. I think he scored a couple of goals that day as well, and that's one of the best number 9 performances I've seen. And you kind of, like you said, you remember that Diego Costa in the hope that he's going to come back like that.
You don't play for Spain and Brazil if you haven't got something.
Dodgy passports.
That is special, isn't it? But don't play for Spain and Brazil if you ain't got something about you. Yeah, he is a character. A few million quid. Probably wouldn't cost a huge amount, but it'd be the wages, wouldn't it? How he would fit into the Premier League. Has he still got that fight desire? He's probably still got the fight, but whether it's directed in the right areas. We'll have to wait and see with that. It would be interesting to see Diego Costa back in the Premier League. It would be interesting to find out how Everton fans would feel about that as well. And same with Wolves. Where would he get in that side with Raúl Jiménez? I suspect not. I think it would be a mistake if he went to Wolves, because they are going down a direction which perhaps they don't need him. Where I think at Everton they do need a number 9. Dominic Calvert-Lewin needs maybe someone like Diego Costa to show him how it's done, and it could perhaps develop him. But I don't think they need that at Wolves. I don't. We'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk some Spurs. This William Saliba transfer saga looked like he was going to go to Arsenal. Well, we're not too sure. It may still happen. May actually go to Spurs now. And also, I know I said we're not going to speak about Harry Maguire. Well, we can talk about his potential replacement. Have you seen this?
No.
Okay. Well, the name that is rumoured to be very heavily linked, and apparently the deal is actually fairly well down the line. Again, I can refer to some sources of mine, and they say whilst they don't believe a bid has gone in, they know there is interest, and it's Brighton's
Lewis Dunk.
And the rumoured, get this, and don't I'll just make a noise, okay? I just want a noise. The transfer fee rumoured to be is $45 million.
We're back.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
Yep, welcome back. Transfer rumour mill, Jake Watson and Graham Butler. Let's talk about Lewis Dunk. £45 million. That's how much Leicester is set to spend on him. This is according to a Sun exclusive in the paper today off the back of the rumoured bid for Harry Maguire and acceptance of that. What do you make of Lewis Dunk? Let's not talk about the transfer fee because it is completely irrelevant. It really, really, really is. And I'm getting so fed up of people saying, oh, I never feel like I saw a Brighton player and £45 million in the same sentence. Mate, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Lewis Dunk as a player, what do you think of him?
I like him.
Yeah?
I like him. I think that would be a very astute replacement for Maguire. Obviously, we're just going on the rumours of the transfer, so say half the money. I think he deserves another shot at the Premier League. I think he was very good in a, let's be honest, a very average to poor Brighton side. I think he's quite a mature head on young shoulders.
He's 27.
And
he's actually, is he older than
Maguire?
Is he really? He's 27.
I thought he was about 24,
yeah,
20,
it's just because he's only been in the Premier League a couple of
years.
Well,
then that's my... I thought he was about 24, 25.
No, and say, I don't do that to call you out on it. It's
no, I genuinely thought he was 24, 25.
It's because everyone thinks he's young. He's one of them.
Yes.
He's one of them Lingards. Because he only broke through to the England squad as well this season.
Yes, that's right.
I've said, oh, it's good to bring these young players through. Well, he's not. He's not. He's been a Brighton first-team player for a long, long time.
Do you know what? That's really disappointing. I knew he wasn't like a 19 or 21-year-old. Yeah. I knew he was sort of established-ish.
No, I thought he was around 24, 25.
27.
He's 27.
Wow.
So this is his prime peak.
So
years.
Now he needs to go now.
It's now or never.
Yeah, this is a sort of, he's maybe like a year behind Maguire, if that makes sense. Mm. Not in terms of age, but in terms of development. He's had a few years at Brighton now, and he's Premiership, wouldn't say proven, established.
I think he is.
I think he's established.
Himself and Duffy. If it weren't for those two, I think Brighton wouldn't be a Premier League side. I think they're that critical.
Yeah. I think with better players around him now, it will, the next sort of 2 years, if he does go this summer, the next couple of years will just probably... It makes it really sound really weird now, doesn't it? The next couple of years, he'll be 29.
Yeah.
But I was trying to say that the next couple of years, we'll just maybe just see how good he is and whether he can sort of emulate Maguire and sort of fast-track himself back into that England squad very quickly and become a sort of regular alongside Maguire.
Yeah. Other rumoured player as well as Dunk is James Tarkowski. Who would you think is the stronger the better out of the two? Or are they much of a muchness?
Probably much of a muchness. To be. How old's Tarkowski?
Oh, we put him under pressure now. I don't know. I'm going to go at 26.
Tarkowski. He's got very big ears. I'd have gone 25.
He's 26. 26. Oh, good,
yeah, he's done this before.
Yeah, it's not the first one.
I would go Dunk.
I tend to agree. It's weird because Tarkowski's played more for England, but I just think it was at that time where it was a little bit fashionable in a weird sense to be at Burnley.
That's right. Yeah.
With Heaton and Pope and Tarkowski when they were doing so well.
Then Ben Gibson sort of joined in the forward, didn't he? Yeah, and then he went to Burnley.
Burnley aren't a fashionable club. That felt weird to say, but there was a time where everyone was very much respecting what they were doing, and Tarkowski got an England corporate at the back of that, and Dunk kind of got forgotten about.
I'm not overly taken on Tarkowski. I think he's a good defender. I wouldn't put him past anywhere further than Burnley, to be honest. And that's sort of not being rude or disrespectful again, but that when we're talking about what is their standard, I think Burnley is his standard. He's dependable, but he's nothing spectacular to go, do you know what? He deserves a move elsewhere.
Yeah.
Dunk, I do think, deserves a move up the ladder and go and test himself with better players against the players that he's been playing against the last few years, but the likes of Chilwell, Schmeichel, Tielemans, you know, you've got all those better players around him. I think it will sort of bring out him a little bit more as a player. Tarkowski, I don't see him improving. I don't see him strengthening anywhere by going anywhere. So, you know, stay at Burnley.
No, it is interesting, isn't it, that Lewis Dunk is actually a year older than Harry Maguire. Everyone just presumes, because Maguire's been around for so long now, it seems, that he's actually younger than Lewis Dunk. But £45 million, that's the rumoured fee that Leicester are going to bid for him if Harry Maguire leaves. Personally, actually, if we do lose Harry Maguire, and let's not talk about Leicester here, I'm just saying, if we do lose Harry Maguire, I actually don't think Leicester need to sign a central defender. We've got Johnny Evans, we've got a Turkish guy called Kalyar Soyuncu, he's a very, very good young player, plays for Turkey week in, week out, played in the Bundesliga, Man City and Arsenal wanted him when we signed him. We've got Filip Benkovic, Croatian international, who we signed last season and sent him out on loan to Celtic. Celtic fans were raving about him last season, and of course we do have Wes Morgan. There are four central defenders. For me, if we sign another one, someone like Lewis Dunk, it's going to massively stunt the progress of Benkovic and Soyuncu. And if we're ever going to play him, let's play him now, because that's why we signed him, because we believed in them at the time. So I'd pocket the cash and then spend £40 million on another winger, because that's where I think we could actually do with strengthening. That is just my thoughts on it. Let's talk about your football club and Saliba, the French central defender, 18 years old. A couple of weeks ago, looked like it was signed, sealed, delivered, off to Arsenal. He was going to sign for £24 million, but he was going to stay there for 12 months to aid his development. Well, it's been a bit weird because we then had the Laurent Koscielny situation, where he now wants to force his way out. And if he does, it means Arsenal are going to be short of a central defender, which in my mind, we think, well, you bring Saliba forward then because you've kind of got one. So why would you leave him there and you've not got loads of cash? But then while all these kind of negotiations and thoughts appear to be happening, this is my reading of the situation, Spurs have thought, actually, no, we need a centre-half. Oh, he's quite good. We'll get him and we'll pay a little bit more money for him.
It's kind of like an ongoing circle that you can't really keep up with. Is These are all just questions that are going to be answered within the next couple of weeks, I guess. Is Alderweireld on the move? If so, Saliba comes
well, they
in.
They have to prepare for him to be going.
Yes.
There's no way that Spurs can be left short.
So I feel if... This is my whole take on this whole situation. Alderweireld stays perfect. Absolutely perfect. We cannot really afford... We cannot afford to let him go and not bring in a ready-made replacement
Absolutely.
There and then. So if Alderweireld goes... Davinson Sanchez, in my eyes, cannot be trusted to play alongside Jan Vertonghen for the whole season.
Serious?
No.
He's been there two seasons
no,
now.
I wouldn't trust him
he's
to
played
play.
He's played for Ajax in a European Cup final. He's played for Spurs in a... Did he play... Well, he's been part of a Spurs side that makes the Cup final.
Good centre-half. I wouldn't... I don't trust him.
45 million quid.
I don't trust him.
Well, he's not good enough then.
I don't trust him to play week in, week out with Vertonghen next year.
What, just because accident-prone, a bit rash?
No, I think he... ball watches too much. He gets himself
in... Do you
think
he'll grow out of that? Or are you just not convinced by him overall?
I would like to hope so, but then, like I've always said, how will he ever grow out of it if he's never given a chance? Mm. So, therefore, I'm kind of contradicting myself, but that's just my opinion. I would like to see him grow out of it and in time learn again and again and again off of Vertonghen and Alderweireld, because you've got to remember Sanchez is still only young.
Yeah.
He's certainly not 27 or 28. No, he's definitely
this
definitely
one is young.
Young. Yes. So I would like to think by being in and around Alderweireld and Vertonghen for another year, he will eventually be coached out of these mistakes that he gets himself in. Now, everyone says, yeah, but his last ditch tackling is great. Yeah, it is great, but he gets himself in poor positions. You never saw Ledley King do a last ditch tackle week in, week out. Mm. One I remember against Robin, which was brilliant.
No, I remember that.
But the good centre-halves don't end up chasing their own goal the whole time, which is kind of what he ends up doing, and he ball-watches at crosses, etc., etc. So, Alderweireld stays perfect for Tottenham. Alderweireld goes, this whole talk about Saliba, I've seen bits of him. I don't claim to be a French connoisseur of football.
Yeah, well,
but
not many, because he's only played about 20 games for them in Ligue 1.
And he's only 18.
Yeah.
Like, let's not be too hasty about this. He is still only 18 years old. But he's a fantastic build and a Tottenham sort of player. But then, like you said, the thing with Saliba is that they offered more money up front but are still willing to loan him back to Saint-Étienne?
Saint-Étienne.
They're still willing to loan him back there, which makes me think, right, so are they just willing to buy him and loan him back in the know-how that Alderweireld might be gone next year so then he can come in? Why would you spend 30 million on a centre-half and loan him back if you knew that one of your centre-halves is leaving the club anyway? Mm. That doesn't make sense. This whole Arsenal situation about it, I genuinely don't think, and I'm not saying this as a Tottenham fan, belittling Arsenal, I don't, I'm just seeing it as a general chat, that I don't think Arsenal know exactly what they want and what they're doing. Because... No, I don't. I genuinely don't think they know what they're doing.
No, I agree.
Because...
But it's funny when it comes from a Spurs fan, because it feels like you mean it's something extra buyer.
Like I said to you last week, Mustafi apparently has removed Arsenal from all of his buyers on
his social media.
Yes,
it's true.
So what is going on there? I know it's mad now when you look at social media and go, he's removed Arsenal, he's removed... That means he's going, but it does. It generally does.
True story, mate. I once had a girlfriend, yeah? And in a rather really mature way, she used to have me in her bio. JLW, little heart and then a little lock. And guess what? One day she took that off. We were still in a relationship. And I messaged her, said, should I read something into this? This is a bit strange. She goes, no. It just didn't fit the characters. She wanted to put something else in there.
Oh, dear.
It did mean
it
something,
did fit,
Graham.
Yeah.
It
so
did.
It's proven that
means
something.
He's lying, like she was.
So Mustafi's lying. And the whole thing with Koscielny really, really surprised me, because I did not expect someone like him to come out with something like that and what he's done this year. I thought, this week, he's a very sort of model professional. He's never, ever kicked up a fuss or got himself in any sort of trouble while he's been at Arsenal at all. He just seems like the model pro. And obviously that came out this week. So there's obviously something there. Mustafi is Mustafi. Who else have they got? Sokratis, who's...
He's okay.
He's okay, but is he what Arsenal want to move forward? Someone
probably
like
the best centre half.
Saliba is, when you look at, if I was an Arsenal fan, we need a bit of a rebuild this summer. Let's bring in some exciting young players and really build something. Saliba would be the ideal person. But why haven't they done it? You know, if a centre half is what they need, why haven't they gone and bought a centre half? If a winger is what they need, why have they not gone and bought a winger?
Because they haven't got any blooming money, mate.
Because they haven't got any money, and I genuinely don't think they know what they want.
Mm.
So,
but it's weird, isn't it, when you've got no money and you're going after Zaha and Saliba and you know, if you've got no cash, I know you have to be looking forward to the future, but if you've got no cash, why would you spend money now on a player you've not even got this season? Because they need bodies in now, don't they? For me, I'm generally, I mean, I couldn't care less about Arsenal. I mean that in the nice way possible. I've got no soft spot for them. But I'm looking at it right now and I'm looking at West Ham's dealings. Mm. I'm looking at Leicester's dealings. I'm looking at Everton. I'm looking at Wolves.
Even at Aston Villa.
And I'm thinking, is Arsenal's team really that strong? Are we that convinced by Emery? I think if I was an Arsenal fan, I wouldn't be thinking, oh, look, we're not going to get Champions League this year. We may be sixth. I'm thinking, actually, guys, you want to be a little bit careful. You're even sixth.
That is a very good point. And I go back to losing Ramsey. That's a massive blow to them. And they haven't even looked at replacing him.
No, so there's not a single central midfielder link. There's rumours Torreira may go.
He's homesick. He wants to go. You know, the whole thing with Tierney, I don't think that's just smokescreen. I don't think that'll go over the line.
No, I think Tierney will happen. I think Tierney will happen. But there's massive question marks over him. It's a player from Scotland. Again, I think Tierney's a good player, but how good is he? I really don't know. Graham, we've got to leave it there. It's been a very busy, exciting day. I am going to go home
and watch the highlights.
And then I'm going to sleep for an entire 4 hours, maybe three. And then I'm going to do this all over again.
Wow.
I love sport.
Oh, Jesus.
Thank you.
On that note.
I'll see you soon, Graham. Thank you very much for your time this evening. Good night.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.